Hello, I'm Dr. Jane, and this is another 10-minute positive mental health podcast. Now, today I'm going to talk about presentation anxiety. This is your public speaking, and it's not necessarily just public speaking. It could literally be just walking up to a group of people at work, socially, and just having an interaction with them that you find crushingly anxiety provoking. Now, if we think about our usual anxiety symptoms, racing heart, feeling sweaty armpits, dry throat, swallowing a lot, breathing, shallow breathing, all the usual things, the tingling in the fingers. And remember, anxiety is that fight or flight, or sometimes faint, response to an imagined worrying or fearful situation. So our body is getting us, our paleo body is getting us used to, of course you're not going to go up to a group of friends and start fighting them, but our paleo body is getting us used to, so the response of that. So think about the situations that you're in. I wanted to talk about somebody called Richard, who was an extremely successful businessman, but he used to, and part of the success of his business was that he used to actually have to do lots of presentations, and he used to find them incredibly crushing. He used to find them, he'd been a businessman for years, and he said it had never got better. If anything, it had got worse. And the more successful his business was, the more that he had to do presentations. And he'd say that people would be looking at him, they'd be thinking that he's stupid because he'd be stammering over his words, he'd be sweating. He'd say that he would look on the page of text that he was having to read out, and the words would be swimming all over the place. And he said sometimes he could make a joke of it, but he was very aware of the fact that he felt that he was coming over as being really stupid. And also, you know, this is a businessman. He didn't want to seem to be inept, which of course then just ramped up the anxiety even more, and then made him even more so. One of the things that he said that he also did was he would overcompensate. So if he was at a business meeting or a networking event or something, and there was a group of people, and he knew that it would be good for his business to be talking to these people, he'd say that he would overcompensate, and he'd go in really loud and brash, and he sometimes felt that that was putting people off. So he never quite got into the whole Dutch courage thing, which was really good. But he said he could see how he could have done it. He could have easily kind of just, you know, stilled himself up with a drink or anything. But he never did that. And that was good. So if you're doing that, if you have presentation anxiety or just social anxiety with other people, and you feel that you have to make it better by drinking or taking some substance or something, please don't do that. Because you're ultimately only making it worse. And there's help out there to, don't just, you know, suddenly stop if you feel that you're doing that a lot. But there is help out there. Look at AA, you know, look on the NHS Choices websites and things. There's stuff out there. But so Rich never actually did that, which was a good thing. But he used to say that he felt he could. If we looked at Richard's bigger picture, he'd come from a, you know, pretty standard family. He said there was never any issues, you know, they all reasonably got on well. He said he felt that his presentation anxiety started when he'd gone to school, and he'd gone to public school, and he said that he had really harsh teachers there. And when he used to have to stand up, you know, there was one particular, I can't remember what subject it was, you know, just say, let's say it was history, and he had to, this one particular history teacher would just pick on him all the time to read from a textbook. And of course he knew this was going to happen, so that used to make him anxious. And they'd say he used to be sick sometimes with the anxiety, or he'd try and get out of it and report himself to the you know, the housemaster or the matron or something, but then inevitably get sent back because they, you know, there wasn't actually anything wrong with him. But he said he felt that's where it came from. And he used to say that when he used to stand there in front of his auditorium of like-minded business people, he used to feel that he was 8 years old again, and he was standing there stammering, talking about a historical textbook or something. So we kind of looked at that. We did a little bit of rethinking work about that. So, you know, when he would stand and he would be all anxious about something, you know, what I'd ask him what his I statements were. Oh, I am stupid. I am incapable. I am. And again, he used to be able to ring, you know, read these off really quickly, because, of course, these were all the stuff that was still ringing in his ears, you know, many, many years after he'd left school, because this is what this particular teacher used to say to him. So we did a bit of reconfiguration of that. So instead of I am stupid because I can't read the words in front of me, what else could he say was, you know, I am capable of reading the words in front of me. I'm not at the moment because I'm nervous, but that doesn't make me stupid. It makes me anxious. And once I can control that anxiety, I can sip some water, I can do some breathing techniques, nobody will know. And he was a funny guy as well, so he used to be able to make jokes about things. And once he kind of got that laughter, that used to bring down his anxiety as well. So he employed what techniques he needed to. So reconfiguring these very strong beliefs that you have, these core beliefs that you're stupid, that you're incapable, and reconfiguring those into, well, I am capable. I've got a really successful business. So I have certain capabilities, obviously, and I'm good at what I do. So he was able to kind of start employing these a little bit more instead of being that 8-year-old self. So the other thing that was useful was that instead of just at these business meetings, instead of just standing up and walking up and giving, delivering his speech, he would purposely go through, like it was a presentation or a performance, he would purposely go through a little bit of a proper warm-up thing. So he'd go for a walk so he could focus himself. He'd do some, the old-fashioned, he would do some old-fashioned theatrical warm-up exercises for his lips and his voice and well. And again, so the first thing that he didn't hear out of his mouth when he was feeling his 8-year-old self in front of all these people, he didn't hear this croak coming. So he was actually ready for the performance. And also, he would make sure that he would read the script before, because that was the other thing that he'd said, that he would just go at it because he was so terrified of it. He would just get the typed up, you know, manuscript, he would just get the typed up script in front of him and then try and read it. But he took time to have it sent to him beforehand and actually read it and read it out loud so he could hear himself talking, which was hugely important. So rather than the first time he's hearing himself talking, he's there and he's anxious, he could actually hear himself talking. So, and just make breaks in it and all the things that he could actually kind of edit it. So it's about thinking about those beliefs that you have in yourself, and certain things will come back to you. And yet in Richard's case, it was often when he was talking to, you know, his colleagues or his, you know, his conferences and things. But just, you know, it's not going to be the same for everybody. But if you have a social or a presentation anxiety, just think about where it's come from, what the core beliefs you have, the negative core beliefs you have about yourself, or the maladjusted core beliefs, whatever we would care to call them, you have about yourself because of that, those formative experiences. And it might not be something as obvious as a nasty, horrible, dictatorial teacher, as in Richard's case. It could be other things. It could just be people that just weren't very friendly to you or would exclude you. Often what I've found over the years is a lot of what goes on with people, especially with anxiety, is related to school days. It cannot be overstated or underestimated how important school days are. So if you are listening to this and you're an adult and you've got children, just make sure that you really properly speak. You don't manufacture things. If there's nothing there, then there's nothing there. But make sure you hear your kids when they talk about school days, because it's important, and what they know to do. Because, you know, in Richard's case, he didn't have anywhere to take it. But say it was all up to date and exactly the same thing was going on. If that child has somewhere to take the experiences of a not very nice teacher to talk about and discuss, then their anxiety is not going to, one, be as high, two, stay with them for as long as it has with Richard. So just, you know, we think about the past, but we think about the future as well, and we think about the now. So just, you know, I just wanted to just throw that one in as well. So it's about the formative situation that informs the core beliefs about yourself and how they stick around and how they remain maladaptive and they stick in your head and then they reappear at the most inconvenient and awkward moments when you just want to go and talk to somebody. Or when you want to just go and talk to a group of people, that might be a social thing, it might be a business thing, but you find that you can't do it because of that. Just think about that, and then just think about replacing the negative stuff with something not necessarily hugely positive, because you don't want to massively overcompensate and then get anxious because you can't live up to that. Just think about something neutral. Just think about, you know, I always say, on one hand we have the negative and on the other hand we have the positive. You know, I've got my hands either side here with about 2 feet in between, and in between is an awful lot of neutral. And it might be that, you know, I'm completely worthless on the one hand, and, you know, I'm the most marvelous thing in the world on the other hand. Let's find something on the neutral scale in between. And it might be in some cases that it's just a little bit away from negative, and other times it might be a little bit further along towards the positive. So just think about how you can just readjust your thoughts about yourself, and then that way it just won't be quite so anxiety provoking. It's not going to be perfect. We all have to have a little bit of anxiety. It's just the way that we are. But it's when it gets too much and it gets too interfering in your life that you need to do something about it. You know, this is specifically about kind of like a presentation anxiety with a little bit of social anxiety. I will do another podcast specifically about social anxiety and shyness and stuff. I will do one a little bit later about specifically about social anxiety. So I have been Dr. Jane. This has been a 10-minute positive mental health podcast. I hope you have found this useful and it's given you something to think about. Don't forget to subscribe to hear all the new podcasts as they come along. And if you want to look at the library, it's at drjane.co.uk/podcasts, and they're all there. I hope you found it useful, and I will speak to you again very, very soon.
Thank you for listening. And don't forget to subscribe to hear future episodes. Dr. Jane can be found on all the usual social media. Feel free to get in contact for topics and questions for future episodes of Dr. Jane's Positive Mental Health podcasts. Dr. Jane cannot enter into personal correspondence. If you have an emergency or crisis, contact your GP or emergency services.